I'm pulling my driveway. We all know what that means. It's time for the drive to work. Okay, so the last four podcasts, I've been talking all about Throne of Eldraine. I think I have one more podcast in me. I left off at Multicolored. So last we had talked, let's see, where was I up to? I think we left off with Calyx that we talked about last time. Okay, so let's start with Dalakos, Crafter of Wonders. Okay, so it costs one blue red, so three mana total, one of which is blue, one of which is red. It's a 2/4 legendary creature, a merfolk artificer, and it has the following ability. Okay, so it's tap, add two colorless mana, spend this mana only to cast artifact spells or ability or activate abilities of artifacts. Equipped creatures you control have flying and haste. So the idea here is it is something most of the set cares about enchantments, but we have one. You do want a few cards that are a little off theme in the sense that you do want occasional things, like just say for example someone comes to your set and the thing that's your theme, they're like, I'm not sure, you know, you want to have a few things in there for people that might not be, so let's say you're just not up for enchantments, okay, here's, we throw you a bone with one, this is the one artifact carrying spell. So basically what this thing does is it produces mana, so blue and red are the two colors most associated, well, blue, red, and white, I guess, are the colors most associated with artifacts. But blue and red definitely does. They're the inventors. That's why, like, you see Izzet, for example, are all the inventors. So anyway, it produces mana that you can use to cast and activate artifacts. And then it also encourages you to play equipment because it, equipped creatures get two abilities, a blue ability, flying, and a red ability, haste. And so this is just something, you know, it's clearly this was made legendary. So this was made as, I think, as a potential commander. Like I said, it's not something that is super thematic here, although the idea of inventors and stuff, there is a lot of, that does show up a lot in Greek mythology. So the source material does have a lot of invention. We're just playing up the idea of enchantments from a mechanical standpoint make a lot of sense here. And we've sort of, Theros is the, or one, I mean, hopefully, I mean, Urza Saga is the other one, but at least it's the world that people associate with enchantments. Urza Saga, we called it the artifact blocks and made broken artifacts and said, hey, look at the enchantments, and no one did. Okay, moving on. Devourer of Memory. So, Devourer of Memory is blue and black, so two mana total. One of which is blue, one of which is black. And so it is a 2/1 creature. It's a nightmare. Hold on one second, let me get some water. Sorry about that. Okay, so it's a 2/1 nightmare for two mana. And whenever one or more cards are put into your graveyard from your library, Devour Memory gets +1/+1 until end of turn and can't be blocked this turn. One blue black, put the top card of your library into your graveyard. So the idea here is that whenever you get milled, since you're playing a blue-black deck, odds are you're milling yourself, it gets bigger. And it's for every batch of milling that happens, meaning it says one, if one or more cards get milled. So when you milled, for every batch of milling, it gets +1/+1. And the idea is for three mana, one blue-black, you can put a card, you can sort of self-trigger itself. So obviously you put this in a deck that cares about graveyard as resource. You're milling yourself. There's a bunch of ways in the set to care about that, escape and other things. And then this card itself, every time you mill, gets unblockable and gets bigger. So instead of 2/1 becomes a 3/2 unblockable. Now you can activate this multiple times to make it bigger. The unblockability doesn't stack, but you can make it bigger if you want. Okay, next. Enigmatic Incarnation. So two green blue, it's an enchantment. At the beginning of your end step, you may sacrifice another enchantment. If you do, search your library for a creature card with converted mana cost equal to 1+ the sacrifice enchantment's converted mana cost, and put that card onto the battlefield, then shuffle your library. So what this does is it turns enchantments into creatures. And it turns into creatures that are one bigger than your enchantment. Now be aware, if you're playing enchantment creatures, you could funnel through enchantment creatures, or you can play some combinations of enchantments and creatures. But this is messing around. In space we've done before, but normally when we've done in the past, it's been creatures going to other creatures. This lets you turn enchantments into creatures. So you can get enchantments, get value out of those enchantments, and then later, after you have less value out of them, you can then turn them into creatures. Okay, next. Galia of the Endless Dance. Red, green, 2/2, legendary creature, satyr. Haste. Other satyrs you control get +1/+1 and have haste. Whenever you attack with three or more creatures, you may discard a card at random. If you do, draw two cards. Okay, so first off, people love the art of this card. Galia is a very happy satyr that is definitely about to have fun. And so the idea is this is a satyr lord. This helps your satyrs. We haven't done a lot of satyrs outside of Theros. In fact, have we done any? We might have done one or two. Mostly they're from Theros. But we made a bunch of satyrs in Theros. They're red and green, so it makes sense she's red and green. One of the things we like to do, like you notice, for example, we'll have, usually every set will have some larger tribal themes. But we like doing one-ofs. Like this is a good example of, hey, here's a satyr lord. If you want to go make a satyr deck, whether or not, I mean, it's legendary, so you can make a commander deck, or you can just make a modern / pioneer deck. And you can go get all your satyrs, put them together, and then it's something that sort of encourages you to make that deck. And we like making lords for various creatures. They don't always have to grant +1/+1, although a lot of them do. But just something that encourages you to just make a deck that maybe you wouldn't have made otherwise. I think that is quite valuable. Okay, next. Haktos the Unscarred. Red, red, white, white. So this is 4 mana, 2 which is red, and 2 which is white. Legendary creature, human warrior, 6/1. Haktos the Unscarred attacks each combat of Fable. As Haktos enters the battlefield, choose 2, 3, or 4 at random. Haktos has protection from each converted mana cost other than the chosen number. Okay, so this is top-down Achilles. So in Greek mythology, Achilles was a mighty warrior. His mother, being very protective, when he was a baby, dipped him into the river Styx, holding him by his heel. And all of him, except for the one place where she held him, that was dipped into the river, became invulnerable. And so he was a very good warrior, because no weapon could harm him. But it turned out he had an Achilles heel. That's where the expression comes from. Which was that his heel was his weakness. And somebody learned about that and shot him in his heel and killed him. But anyway, Ethan had wanted to make Achilles in the original Theros. I think the original card just had protection from 3, I think. The idea was that, and Ethan tried to get it in. It was in the file. We handed it off from Vision. Or from design back then. It wasn't Vision design yet. We handed it off from... It ended up leaving for various reasons. I think Ethan tried to get it in again at Journey to Nyx, because he led Journey to Nyx. But it didn't make it there either. So finally, we tried again, and Ethan changed it up a little bit. This time, randomizing, sort of like... So you don't quite know what it has protection from. So your opponent has to sort of figure it out. Like, oh, is it 2? Is it 3? Is it 4? So let's... Since you don't quite know what it is, you have to experiment with things to figure out what'll work and what will not work. I think it's a secret. Let me take it back. Is it secret or not? No, I guess the opponent knows whether it's 2, 3, or 4. You just choose it at random. So you, the person playing it, don't get to pick it. But I guess everybody knows what it is once what it is. But that means they then have to find that answer to be able to deal with them. Anyway, the card turned out really cool, and I'm glad that Ethan was... followed my school of thought of, if you like something, just keep making it eventually. Eventually, they'll let it through. Okay. Next. Hero of Nyxborn. So Hero of Nyxborn is 1 red-white, so 3 mana total, 1 of which is red, 1 of which is white. It's a 2/2 enchantment creature, human soldier. When Hero of the Nyxborn enters the battlefield, create a 1/1 human soldier creature token. And whenever you cast a spell that targets Hero of Nyxborn, creatures you control get +1/+0 until end of turn. So that ability, the last ability, is basically what the ability Heroic was. Although heroic was whenever you were targeted, whenever this creature's targeted, generates an effect. So in this set, there's five cards that essentially have heroic. All of them do the same thing. They're in red and white. Two in red, two in white. I think one common red, one uncommon red, one common white, one uncommon red white, which is the red-white signature card, the archetype card. And all of them grant +1/+0 until end of turn. We didn't put heroic on them just because there weren't that many of them. They all did the same thing. We did label them all Hero of Blank. And like I said, they're in red and white. And so the idea was that it is... red-white is the aggro deck. So it was a heroic thing that really played into a go-wide aggro strategy because it pumps your team. The card that makes you want to build around it, not only does it do that, but it also makes a 1-1. So for 3 mana, I get a 2-2 and a 1-1. And so if I target Hero, just off what I have in the battlefield, forget anything else I have, I'm going to hit you for 5 damage, right? Because I have a 2-2, it becomes a 3-2, and the 1-1 becomes a 2-1. Next, Clothis, God of Destiny. 1 red-green, so 3 mana total, 1 which is red, 1 which is green. 4/5, legendary enchantment creature god. Indestructible. As long as your devotion to red and green is less than 7, Clothis isn't a creature. At the beginning of your pre-combat main phase, exile target card from a graveyard. If it was a land card, add red or green. Otherwise, you gain 2 life, and Clothis deals 2 damage to each opponent. One of the things that's kind of funny here is, first off, let me talk about the God of Destiny. So, it's a red-green god. Destiny is very much a green concept. So the idea that the red-green god is the god of destiny here is not saying that red and green inherently together are the concept of destiny as much as it's a god of destiny, very green thing, that has a very red outlook on life. That is very much, has a very adamant style, you know what I'm saying? So it is kind of a character that has red means to get to a green end goal. A lot of times I talk about with multicolor how sometimes one color is the end goal and some's the means. This is a god of fate whose end goal is fate, so end goal is green, but a lot of her methods are red. In original Theros, when Xenagos became a god, it was because the red-green god had gone missing, and he took her place. This is the red-green god. She's trapped in the underworld, and we knew we had to let you see her, because everybody was all, where was the red-green god? What happened to the red-green god? So we wanted to show you the red-green god. This is obviously designed like the other gods. The one thing is that the other gods are all have static ability, activate ability. She just has an activate ability. But she functions like the other two-color gods, where the devotion is of both of them have to add up to 7 rather than just one color add up to 5. So she's modeled after the two-color gods from original Theros block. Born of the Godhead, the allies, and Journey to Nyxhead, the enemy. So the idea is... she's exiling cards from graveyard, and then one of two things happen. Either, if it's a land, you're generating mana, and red and green are the two colors that generate mana. If it's a not a land, you're essentially draining your opponents for 2, which is funny because you saw this before in a red-white card as well. Red does direct damage, and white and green gain life. So red does damage, green gains life. Black can do that by itself as a drain. This technically is not a drain from a flavor standpoint. You're just getting 2 effects. But they are 2 effects that go together on another color. So apparently, I think for some reason it's entertaining to us to let red, white, and now red, green cards do drain effects because red does damage and white and green gain life. But anyway, that is the God of Destiny. Okay, next. Kroxa, Titan of Death's Hunger. Black red, so 2 mana total for a 6/6, a legendary creature, Elder Giant. But when Kroxa enters the battlefield, sacrifice it unless it escaped. So when you first time you cast it for 2 mana, it's a 6/6, but it dies right away. Then it says whenever Kroxa enters the battlefield or attacks, each opponent discards a card. Then each opponent who didn't discard a non-land card loses 3 life. So when you play it and sacrifice right away, you do generate that effect as well as when you escape it. And then it's escape black, black, red, red, so double the cost to cast it normally. Exile 5 other cards from your graveyard, and then it gets to come out. So the idea is, I play this for 2 mana, I make my opponent discard a card. If they didn't discard a land card, it also makes them lose 3 life. And then I now have a creature that once I've built up 4 mana and 5 cards in my graveyard, I get to bring out a 6/6. The Titans, like I said earlier, I said on a previous podcast, the Titans were something new we added that we hadn't done in original Theros block. We were trying to find some new space to play around with, and the Titans are a big part of Greek mythology. They predate the gods, so we decided that we would do our version of the Titans. Ethan originally made the Titans a cycle of monocolored Titans. It turned out that, A, we didn't have space for 5, and since they were legendary, it made a little more sense to make them multicolored just to give them a little more play and maybe make them more exciting commanders. So we ended up making 2 multicolored ones, one of which is Kroxa. I'll get to the other one in a second. They both have the shtick of sacrifice me when you play me, and you can only escape me from the graveyard. The only way to get me into play, really, is escape me. But I have an enter the battlefield effect, so when you play me for the cheaper version, I'm generating an effect. Okay, next, Kunaris, Hound of Aetherios. 1 white, black. So 3 mana total, 1 white, 1 black. It's a 3/3 hound, legendary creature. It's got vigilance, menace, and lifelink. Creature cards in graveyards can't enter the battlefield, and players can't cast spells from graveyards. Okay, so this is Cerebus, or our version of Cerebus, the three-headed dog that guards the underworld. So, Aetherios is the god of the underworld, or the god that guards the underworld, I guess. So he has a dog, three-headed dog, because we're doing trope space here. Because the guard has 3 heads, the dog has 3 heads, it has 3 abilities, Vigilance, Menace, and Lifelink. Vigilance, a white ability. Menace, a black ability. Lifelink, a white and black ability. And then creature cards in graveyards can't enter the battlefield, and players can't cast spells from the graveyard. So while he's out, he's guarding the doggy is guarding the graveyard. And so Coronis keeps you from getting things away. You can't escape. Well, he's guarding. So I think this is pretty flavorful. Mischievous Chimera. Blue-red. So 2 mana total for a 2/2 enchantment creature, a Chimera. Flying. Whenever you cast your first spell for each turn, Mischievous Chimera deals 1 damage to each opponent, and you scry 1. So this is the blue-red uncommon build-around card. Like I said, it's spell-based and wants you to stuff on your opponent's turn. So this rewards you for that by doing a red effect, do 1 damage to the opponent, and a blue effect, scrying 1. So this is just the card that sort of encourages you to do it. But also, it's a 2-mana 2/2 flyer. I mean, it's a pretty efficient card. And if you do what it says, if you generate a lot of the effect, it's pretty potent. Okay, next, Pelucanos Unchained. 2 black-green for a legendary creature, Zombie Hydra. So it's a 0/0, but Pelucanos enters the battlefield with 6 +1/+1 counters on it. It escapes with 12 +1/+1 counters on instead. So it's a 6/6 creature, and when it dies, you can bring it back from the graveyard, not as a 6/6, but as a 12/12. If damage will be dealt to Pelucanos while it has a +1/+1 counter on it, prevent that damage and remove that many +1/+1 counters. So any damage to it is kind of permanent. So if I'm a 6/6 and you do 4 damage to me, I take 4 damage permanently, now I'm a 2/2. 1 black-green, Pelucanos fights another target creature, and escape, 4 black-green, exile 6 other cards from your graveyard. So basically, you get a 4-mana 6/6, although it's a 6/6 that all damage is permanent, so it's a little more vulnerable than most, fragile than most. But it also has this fight ability, so you can use it. The one thing here is, unlike the ETB fight, this thing really gives something up to fight, that you're losing your size based on damage, so you really are losing some creature for the fight, so this feels a little more right for a green fight card. Also, it's a black-green card, not just a green card. But anyway, Pelucanos was a legendary Hydra from the original Theros, and now it's dead and in the underworld, so that's pretty flavorful. And so we wanted to make a really splashy Pelucanos, but this time it's an undead Pelucanos, so that's kind of cool. Okay, next. Siona, Captain of Pileus. 1 green-white, so 3 mana total, 1 of which is green, 1 of which is white. It's a 2/2 legendary creature, human soldier. When Siona, Captain of the Pileus, enters the battlefield, look at the top 7 cards of your library. You may reveal an aura card from among them and put it in your hand. Put the rest of the bottom of your library in random order. And whenever an aura you control becomes attached to a creature you control, create a 1/1 human soldier creature token. So this is an aura lord. It's a white green, it's legendary, it's meant for, can be a commander. And the idea is that it both helps you find auras and then rewards you for playing auras. And so it's like, this wants to be played with lots of auras, you play with a lot of auras, and both, it'll help you go get the auras, and it will make lots of 1/1 creatures. So, and the reason 1/1 creatures are nice is it just makes more things that you can put auras on. Okay, Slaughter Priest of Mogus, black and red. Creature, Minotaur Shaman, 2/2. Whenever you sacrifice a permanent, Slaughter Priest of Mogus gets +2/+0 until end of turn. 2, sacrifice another creature or enchantment, Slaughter Priest of Mogus gains first strike until end of turn. Okay, so this is, I believe, the black-red build-around, uncommon build-around. Black and red are all about sacrificing things. Black can sacrifice creatures. Red can sacrifice enchantments. Red can also sacrifice creatures. But sacrifice enchantments is something we gave to red in this set. So whenever you sacrifice a permanent, they think it's bigger. Mogus, by the way, I think is the one of the gods is a Minotaur. And so this is a Minotaur Shaman, but to the Minotaur god. And like I said, we mentioned all the gods. Some of them are on cards, but all the rest we mentioned through names and flavor text and stuff. The other thing is that this thing can... you can pay to sacrifice a creature or enchantment. Like I said, black tends to sacrifice creatures, red sacrifice enchantments. So you can sacrifice either because of the black-red card. And then that means you can trigger itself. And when you sacrifice a creature, it gets first strike. So not only does it get +2/+0 because of its static ability, but when you sacrifice a creature enchantment to it, essentially becomes a 4/2 first striker, which is a pretty scary thing. Next, Uro, Titans of Nature's Wrath. This is the other Titan. It's in green-blue. So one green-blue, 3 mana total. One is green, one is blue. It's a 6/6 legendary elder giant. When it enters the battlefield, sacrifice unless it escapes. So same trick as the other one. When Uro enters the battlefield or attacks, you gain 3 life and draw a card. Then you may put a land card from your hand on the battlefield. So it's a very green-blue card. And then escape green-green, blue-blue, exile 5 other cards. So it's mirrored very much like the other Titan. I think the other Titan costs 2 mana. This costs 3. But other than that, it costs CCDD or MMNN, 2 colors and 2 other colors to escape it. It has an effect that's generated. You know, it's sacrificed if you don't get it from if you don't escape it. But it has an enter the battlefield effect, so it triggers both times, either if you cast it or escape it. And then it just becomes this big scary 6/6. Notice that we didn't cross over colors because we just did 2 of them. We did 1 black red and 1 green blue. Everybody seemed to think that's some conspiracy against white. I think we just made 2 that we thought were cool. We weren't trying to necessarily leave white out, but if you make 2 two-colored things and don't overlap colors in a 5-color game, you're going to miss one. So missing white was not on purpose. Okay, next. Warden of the Chained. 1 red-green. It's a Minotaur warrior. It's got trample. Warden of the Chained can't attack unless you control another creature with power 4 or greater, and it's a 4/4. So it's a 3-mana 4/4, which is pretty good, but you have to have another 4-power creature to attack with it. Note that red-green, this is the build-around card for red-green at Uncommon, having creatures power 4 or greater is the theme in red-green. So this thing is kind of like, hey, I'm really good, but you got to be playing some other 4-power creatures. And so hopefully you're doing that. Okay, into artifacts. Altar of the Pantheon. So Altar of the Pantheon is an artifact that costs 3. It says your devotion to each color and combination of colors is increased by 1. Tap, add 1 mana of any color. If you control a god, a demigod, or a legendary enchantment, you gain 1 life. Okay, so the idea is this card started because we wanted to make a card that increased devotion. We spent a lot of time trying to figure out what that means. Eventually, it turned out you could just say, hey, your devotion is +1. Notice we say color or combination of colors. The goal wasn't to make 2-color gods have +2 devotion. It's just +1. If you care about devotion, you're +1 in devotion is the idea. And then for flavor, the idea is, okay, well, if it's going to have to do with devotion, it's probably tied to the gods. Okay, well, what if we give you some reward if you're playing something thematic? And so the idea is, you know, it can add mana of any color, so you want to play this because it adds mana. I mean, it's a three-cost artifact that casts for any mana. That's something you might want to play if you're playing 2 or more colors. And then, for a little extra bonus, a little just more flavor than anything, it gives you a life if you have a god, a demigod, or a legendary enchantment. And I think the reason it says legendary enchantment is I'm not sure if gods are gods before they become creatures, if they haven't been turned on yet. So that we wanted to make sure that you counter the god. You know, if Heliod's in play, whether or not Heliod's a creature, you still got to count it. So that is why it said that. Okay, next. Entrancing Lyre. So this costs 3. It's an artifact. You may choose to not untap Entrancing Lyre during your untap step. X tapped. Tap target creature with power X or less. It doesn't untap during its control or untap step as long as Entrancing Lyre remains tapped. So the idea here is this is a lyre that plays itself. It's funny because in Throne of Eldraine we had a harp that plays itself and ended up getting cut. But that trope actually overlaps between Greek mythology and fairy tale. So my assumption is it started in Greek mythology because that's older than fairy tales. But anyway, it does overlap between them. When Jack goes, there's a self-playing harp. Anyway, the idea is this can lock something down so you can... but because locking down things is powerful, it's X. So you have to lock down larger things, you have to pay more mana. But once you lock it down, you can choose not to untap it and then keep it tapped. This is a mechanic that goes way back. We've been doing this mechanic for a long, long time of locking things and leaving it locked. Okay, next, Nyx Lotus, 4. Legendary artifacts. Nyx Lotus enters the battlefield, tap. Choose a color. Add an amount of mana of that color equal to your devotion to that color. So this is a lotus that taps for devotion, meaning it taps with that much devotion. This is pretty potent. I'm not up in some of the larger formats, but I have to believe, at least in monocolor decks, that this card's going to see some play. It's a pretty potent card. But anyway, I think we wanted to make something... By the way, the way you can tell we think it's powerful is we put Lotus on it. We do not use the word Lotus. It's a pretty potent word that excites our players. And so, A, it has to produce mana, because that's what Lotuses do, and multiple mana. But we don't tend to use Lotus unless we really think the card is something people are going to like. We made a few mistakes back in the day, so it's not as if we've never, like Lotus Garden should not have said Lotus on it. But most of the time now, when you see Lotus, it's what we call a power word. It excites people. So, you know, you're not going to see it without it being something we at least think is going to be exciting. Not guaranteed. It might be something that we think we think it's exciting. I guess it doesn't have to be powerful. Usually it's something that's exciting partly because it's powerful. And making mana is usually good. Okay, next, Shadow Spear, 1, legendary artifact equipment. Equipped creature gets +1/+1 as trample and lifelink. 1, permanent your opponent control, lose hexproof and indestructible at end of turn, and equip 2. So this is the spear that Elsbeth uses. It's sort of a nightmare spear. I don't want to, so spoilers, but she uses it, she runs it through a god, so we, losing hexproof indestructible is... it is important that you could do what the character can do in the story, which is stab a god. And so this is a weapon that you can use to address and answer gods. And so a lot of people ask why we didn't make it colored. I don't know. I guess the thing there was, I think we wanted Elsbeth to use it. She's mono white, but the spear itself didn't feel mono white. And so just say you make it black, which is kind of what the... Well, it also, it gets trampled lifelink. Well, Anyway, we wanted Elsbeth to have it, and if we made it something that was a certain color, it might be weird that this mono-white card got access to this not-white thing, so we just made it colorless. I think that's why we made it colorless, for flavor. Okay, I'm almost done here. Thundering Chariot. 4, Artifact Vehicle, 3/3, First Strike, Trample, Haste, Crew 1. I think this is the only vehicle in the set. Just the idea of a chariot, you know, we're in Greek time, so we thought fun to make a chariot. The idea that it's sort of, it's super fast and it can run you over. So First Strike and Haste are kind of on the fast thing, and then Trample's like, oh, it'll run you over. So I think that's kind of cool. We're almost done. I will finish up with Labyrinth of Skophos. I went out of order. Or did I? Oh, no. This is a land. This is a land. That's why. It's not out of order. Lands are after artifacts. Okay, but this is my final card of the day. Labyrinth of Skophos. Land, tap for colorless mana. 4 and tap, remove target attacking or blocking creature from combat. So this card is making reference to the labyrinth of the labyrinth of Greek mythology, where the one and only Minotaur existed, where Theseus was trapped in it. And the labyrinth, the idea of a labyrinth was people couldn't find their way out. So this is playing in similar space to Maze of Ith, which was another labyrinth, which is probably making the same reference. Although Maze of Ith you just tapped, this costs 4 and tap, so it's got a little bit more to use. Maze of Ith was a little bit powerful. And this is the card that ties to the red, there's a red Minotaur that if you have them together, then he fights the things in the maze. So that was that. So anyway, we've now made it through all of Theros Beyond Death. So I hope you guys enjoyed it. It was a fun set to work on. I like Greek mythology, and like I said, this is my fourth set based in Theros. So it's fun. I worked on all three of the previous sets, obviously worked on this set. So I hope you guys enjoyed this podcast. I had 5 of them, so I had plenty to say. So anyway, I'm now at work. So we all know that means it means it's the end of my drive to work. So instead of talking magic, it's time for me to be making magic. I'll see you guys next time. Bye-bye.